February 15th, 2009, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Coming to you on a Sunday here at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, somewhere west of the Rockies, north of the equator. Brother Matt.
Yeah, welcome.
Good to see you again.
Hello. How's it?
Well, we start off the show with John Coltrane doing Sunday, nice. Which is appropriate.
Perfect.
And then we heard Feedbacker Part 5, final part of their Feedbacker trip. Boris, Tokyo band. We have guests today, Brother Matt.
Welcome.
Well, one on the rebound who's been here on board many times is Peak.
Hi.
Glacel Park via Thailand. Fresno. You know that town in Thailand, Fresno?
I'm going to make one.
It's far east Thailand. Very far east. And you got some buddies here because now it's called couchsurfing.com, right, via?
That's right.
This meeting point, this rendezvous. She has, we've had some on before, a cat from England and a cat from Italy, right?
Yeah.
Now from, we got a U.S. gentleman and a Danish gentleman. So you might introduce him, Miss Pete. No tiny voice.
No tiny. First, we have Ulrich. Is that
me.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you say that in your language?
My name is Ulrich Lund from Denmark.
Which town?
I live in Copenhagen now.
Ah, the big one.
Yeah, the only one.
Island. And?
We have Adam from Maine.
Right, Portland.
Portland, Maine.
Big town of Maine.
Yeah.
I've played many times. And I played Copenhagen too. Both nice towns. Both north of Pedro.
Welcome
so
to
maybe,
Pedro.
Yeah, maybe February, much different in Maine,
yeah.
Much different in Denmark.
Down here, certainly.
Yeah, I noticed the shorts over here.
Righteous. This is like summer to me.
Yeah. And this is our rainiest month. Probably we're going to have rain tonight. But we need it. We got a kind of a drought going. We don't need a lot at once because of the mudslides, because all the big fires we had last year, you know about that. At one point, we had 300 going in the state, 300 fires, which, by the way, Australia.
Oh, man.
That's just where I came from, where that fires are, those fires are.
Like in the southeast part, but north of Melbourne or something.
Victoria.
Yeah. Victoria, right, and millions of animals and a couple hundred people. A lot of houses, homes.
Glad I'm not there anymore.
It's terrible. Now, do you know about it? Were they arson fires?
No, I have no idea. Okay. I haven't been looking into it.
You know what arson is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When some cat lights.
Yeah, yeah. But I haven't.
Because there's fires. Nature's had it with the lightning. I saw it once. I was on tour in Wyoming. And we were at Gorge. Fire Gorge, in fact. Yeah, I remember we were slovenly and they're trying to put up a tent and the wind just took that thing and said no. It blew it away. Blew the fucking tent away. Bye. Sayonara. So across the river, I saw the lightning bolts coming down, some 3-4 at a time, and just you could see the fire starting where it hit. Yeah. And in fact, nature's got some kind of trees. Their seeds only germinate if there's
like
a
redwoods.
Fire. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they need it.
So.
Yeah, you need fires to.
That's right. Clear out the scrub and stuff. But these fires were so intense, they burned through. People are building in canyons and stuff, maybe where we shouldn't have paths. And so hard for fire trucks to go to. And when it burns out so much, there's no more watershed. There's no more stuff to hold the ground together. So when a rain does come, slides. It's terrible. I mean, what about pads where the windows get pushed out? Huh? They fill up with so much mud.
Stuff
the mud fills
right.
up. It pushes out the windows. Yeah, that's
quick.
Think of pudding or something. It's intense. So heart goes out to the brothers and sisters in Australia. Weather this hell.
So how long you been traveling?
I've been traveling for a little over 3 months now. I started with a month in Australia, Victoria and New South Wales, and I went to New Zealand for 2 months, and this is my last stop. I have 2 weeks here in California, leaving on this Tuesday.
And then back Denmark.
Back home. Yeah.
And Adam?
I've been traveling like maybe 3 months or so. Started in Maine and kind of made my way. Eventually I went to Texas by a plane from Boston, and then my friends miraculously gave me a car in Austin, Texas for free. And then I drove.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's still
so
working.
Your trip's been U.S.
No.
Yours, Adam's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mine's been all U.S., yeah.
Yours been the... You know, there's a word for that, the Antipodes.
Oceania?
Antipodes, like, our antipodes.
Oh, yeah. We've been up.
It's an old word. It's the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was
Antipodes, they call it.
I was literally on the other side of the earth from my home.
Yeah. Right.
12 hours away, and... opposite sides, north and south, so it was
yeah,
couldn't
you
get any further away.
Now this, I think this is a righteous thing, because in the older day, or when I was less, or I was more younger, when I was more younger, really, for Econo dudes, the only way to see other, outside your town and shit, besides having relatives that put up with you, is be in a band. But now there's other ways to tour. There, this couchsurfing.com, huh? How'd you find out, Adam Murray?
I don't remember, actually. I heard about it somewhere.
Maybe
it's the first time you've done
it. Something like this. I mean, yeah, I don't
and
remember.
And it's couchsurfing.com.
I think it's
yeah.
.org, is it?
No, it's called.
Oh, it's called.
Yeah.
So go there. If you ain't got a lot of bucks, it's a network of cats letting dudes conk. Now, the thing of conking on couches or decks... that goes back to band days, mm-hmm. Okay? That's the way I started touring mm-hmm. almost 30 years ago. I still tour that way. I got another tour coming up, Brother Matt, middle of April through May,
cool.
with my Missing Man, and stop in New York halfway and make my third opera.
Cool.
But this is how it was. The kind of punk in U.S. was small. So the scene, but the people were into it. So you could play the pad. In fact, it was all networked through, because there's no internet yet, but
yeah.
fanzines, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the fanzines, the cat who was running the fanzine in that town, his band would probably open. He'd get the hall together to play at, because we couldn't play rock and roll clubs mostly, because they're prejudiced against us. And then you'd conk at his band would open up, and then after the gig, you'd conk at his pad. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, it was like, from the stage, just calling after the gig. Hey, who's got a... What I would always say is, who's got a safe pad for the boat? Because you're always thinking of the boat, huh? Mm. And you don't want, can't play the gig with no bass amp, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You got a safe place to put the boat. We got conch sacks right on the deck. You know, and there'd be dudes, and then you get the home-cooked chow. I mean, it was a happening thing. But that was a network... through a music trip. This thing is just... I mean, obviously, there was a traveling before punk bands. In fact, there was a U.S. kind of thing where you graduated high school, and before you went to college, or maybe a year into college, you'd go to Europe, and they call it backpacking. And there was a thing called youth hostels. In fact, we got a hostel here in Pedro. And kind of dudes bum, because we're 30 miles south of Hollywood, and they want to get to Hollywood. You know, because in their minds, this image, I got to see Hollywood. So they got to ride this bus for like 10 hours. And they're all, but they don't know that this is happening at the hostel's here, because we got the beautiful name. And when they get to Hollywood, they find out that was just image.
Yeah, right.
There's that sign on the hill, a real tough street scene. They'll eat you alive. Maybe it's good for people to see, though. They should see the dirt behind the daydream.
The real deal.
Yeah, right.
It's all commercial now, Hollywood.
Yeah, but there's still that heavy street thing. Especially if you're like a young cat, you know, walking around. You got to be careful. You got to be careful. But that's the way, the kind of way used to be, mm-hmm. hostile. But now, network through the couchsurfing.com, you see who's got a... Now, you're talking, you want to do a couch tour.
That's why I'm putting people up now.
Karma account. It's a karma account.
Putting money in the bank.
That's right.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm going to be relying it heavily the next year.
No. It's a great thing. I think for folks to check out other pads is so healthy. For them themselves. But for the cats they're visiting. Because it's all big. A lot of this... Now, a lot, this is just opinion, but the way they sell us a lot of shit with the consumer culture is they want to make you think you're an expert. yeah, you got great opinions. You'll buy our thing here at wherever. So you get this kind of weird sense of confidence that you know everything through television and images. This is false. You really, you never know everything, but you get a little more glimpse when you actually one-on-one with people. So you go to their lands. You have them come to your land. I was lucky because of my work. But I think it is a great thing for everyone, whatever their work. Man, it would help.
It's like education.
Some ways we could sidestep all the government crap. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're one-on-one, they almost don't exist, except for the hell they put in the way.
Yeah, you gotta watch TV to get it.
Yeah, the TV. I mean, you know, it's just a machine, and whatever it's being carried on it really is probably more vulgar than the machine itself. The machine probably has a lot of possibility if it was just worked right. But this idea of people traveling and being different places and letting the different places meet them. I like this. So, much respect, Adam, over it. Miss P.
Happy trails.
Yeah. Let's play some music.
Thank you. aggressive wants to be your best friend. He's got a hot awful memory, wearing girly underwear. Friends are like soldiers. He's gonna look here, friends are like soldiers. He's gonna look here, friends are like soldiers. He's got the looks to kill, friends are like soldiers. He's got the looks to kill. Private, is that lipstick you're wearing, boy?
Sir, yes, sir!
Mean streets, kill machines, weapon of the enemy, bring the freedom fighting to demand. Fighting for his uncle's death. Got a gun, he wears a dress, wants to be your best friend. He's got a hard on for the ring, wearing girly underwear. Friends are like soldiers. He's got the looks to kill, friends are like soldiers. He's gonna look at it, and like soldiers. He's gonna look at it, and like soldiers. He's got the looks that kills.
My lover is not a such small thing. I've got to hunt on my skin, I must confess.
I'm gonna make it.
Watt from Pedro show. We just heard Kaori. Now, this ain't the Kaori I know, but somebody floated to me. It's kind of a disco thing, huh? A little bit, maybe. Or Bossa Nova. And Coming to My Life. And before that, we had the Round Eyes. I think they're from Arizona with Transvestite Soldier. And Daniel Kwan before that with Say Cheese. And we started with Anita Sue with He Reads Dostoevsky. Some piano from Minnesota. We're back with Adam. Go, Rick. Steve.
Oh, by the way, Adam brought some vinyls. Can you still do vinyl?
In fact, we've been enabled.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
You know this? I check this out. This is the Jim Morrison movie.
Oh,
things
good.
Like almost 4 hours long.
What is it?
Me and Raymond Pettibone made a Jim Morrison movie called Red Tide Rising, Venus or Mars. And it's a four where I didn't shave and wore leather pants and it's pretty pissed, poor Jim Morrison
amazing.
Person. But Raymond's got DVD versions now of the gallery put out,
wow.
Regan Projects. And also Sir Drone.
Mm.
I think 2001, 2002 is the Morrison one, and the Sir Drone was 89. Weatherman 69. Yeah, but Sir Drone was with Mike Kelly, and Weatherman 69 was with Kim and Thurston, who are in town. In fact, Thurston is feeling sick. He wanted to come on down, but he's got a flu bad. He's here till Friday, though, or Saturday.
He's supposed to be DJing tonight at the Mocha?
No, he did that last night. A little bit with Watson.
You guys did
and
that
the night before, me and Raymond did. Twofer.
How'd that
go? What a pair. Well, it was 3 hours on the road. Yeah, you guys dig the traffic in this place?
Yeah.
Bonk. That's why me and Brother Matt, we stay in Pedro. This traffic is like London or something. You been to London?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been driving there, but...
That traffic. The tube thing's okay, but the traffic is...
Yeah.
And it can get that way in SoCal. Really bad. Because we don't have good transit.
Yeah.
Tiny thing with buses, and there's some light rail, blue line. It's bunk. So 3 hours driving, I'm a half hour late for the thing. And plus the rain, so... And so... And also, they put us in this cement kind of patio thing where the... It sounded like a roller rink or fucking bowling alley. But I would play a song, Raymond would play a song, first he was playing some vinyls, you know, like two song records at the same time. And then he said, fuck it, I'll just play songs from my computer. I used the iPod. It was interesting. And then, you know, it's been a little cold for Cali.
Yeah. It
must have been in like the low 50s.
Oh, Jillian.
Cold.
And then we went to the Mint. And played with Hellride. Probably my last gig with Perkins for a long time.
James
is kicking in.
Well, he's got the Jane addiction thing.
Yeah.
With all the original members now. And
how was Hellride?
And yeah, it's probably last time I'm played with Perk for maybe a year, maybe.
Wow.
I played really violently. Yeah. I was very aggressive and intense. My hands yesterday were like mittens.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I got.
Speaking of which,
well, I brought Raymond, you know, and I wanted to play good for him. And then Scotty's stepson, Scott Ashton's stepson, was there and stood right in front of me. And man, you know, we're going to be doing Stooges. I got to lay into these. And I was just feeling it anyway. I think these bands before us went and stalled and bogarted. So it wasn't until pretty near 12 when we went on, and I was just ready to burst. Plus, that was kind of weird. The Mocha thing was, there were some nice people and stuff, but I'm a social tard, you know. It was weird fitting in with that. So I just had some pent-up whatever issue rock, and I just let it out through that little Dan bass.
He got the jam.
Fuck, it was, I kind of dug it going on, and then the adrenaline was riding high on me, so as soon as I got that shit, well, the dude wanted to help me with this cat's Curtis, a cool cat there. No, parking, that pad was packed, so the parking was way down. You want to help me? We're rolling them amps like 3-4 blocks. More, maybe. He was like, damn. But he did it. And so as soon as I got back, I drove off. Because riding on the adrenaline, man, I was beat. I was tired. It was hard paddling yesterday morning. Yeah, but it was worth it. So I'm glad I did. I want to hear more about you guys' adventure.
Hear about this. Adam. Met Nels, 13, 14 years ago? In the East Coast? So he knows Nels.
This is Nels Klein. And anybody who knows Nels, that deserves, right, big. You got to tell us the story.
Well, I was a teenager. I think it was the record that you put out.
Injure Moon, first opera.
1995?
Ball
Hog, yeah.
And the wrestling record.
Yeah, I was all into the Minutemen, and I heard that record, and I really liked it a lot.
I think Nels is the most prominent musician on there besides a fucking bass player.
Yeah, so I heard that, and I had to go see you guys. You played in I grew up outside of New York City in Connecticut, and so I had to go see you all play, and I saw him play. I saw you guys play, and it was just blown away. And
Tramps?
I think it was maybe Irving.
Irving Plaza?
Yeah, I think it was Irving Plaza. I think that's where.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like 15 or
that
16.
That band was called the Crew of the Flying Saucer. That's where right, I tried two drummers.
Yeah.
The problem was they hated each other. So it didn't work out. Never tried two drummers. Also, Bogart's a lot of room. So couldn't use one boat. I had to take two boats. Wow. And the little boat that Vince Maroney took, man, that thing was, a prayer. It was terrible. Broke down. He missed a lot of gigs.
Wow.
The guy who rebuilt the motor, the ship was askew, so it skipped eating a distributor drive shaft. Just chewing up the pinion gear. Yeah, he went through like three of them. What a nightmare. But, you know, everything is a lesson. Everything's got something to teach you, so I learned a lot on that tour. Well, you saw him. Did you get to meet him and talk with him?
Yeah. I mean, I was blown away by his guitar playing. It just, like, you know, when I was like 15, it just like totally blew my mind, you know.
But you got to meet him and talk to him after.
Yeah, afterwards I went up to him.
And what was that like?
He's like one of the most down to earth, sweetest people I've ever met. Like, he's so genuine, and like I was like this, you know, angsty 15, 16 year old teenager guy.
Yeah.
And I went up to him, and he was just like so, you know, sweet and like really
like
down to earth. And
his roots are Scandi, Norga, Nels Klein. He's from his people. It was really Nils,
but
the immigration man fucked up and spelled it Nels. Was he's named after grandfather? But that's his roots, his people.
Yeah, the Danish roots.
Yeah. In Norway.
Yeah.
Scandi. But he's a very sweet guy, huh?
Yeah, and so I would, you know, just go and see.
Amazing guitarist, very unique individual.
Yeah.
A guy can make an album with him, and I don't even have to show him the songs. I can go in the studio with him with the songs. I took him to Tokyo. He had never played over there.
Wow.
So last week in December, I took him and we made an album.
Whoa.
He flew in. The next day, he played the gig and then made the album in 2 days with us.
Wow.
Really great. And as a person, too. He's a gentleman.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would just go and see him play as a teenager whenever he played in New York.
Because after that, he joined Geraldine Fibbers.
Yeah. I saw Geraldine Fibbers a couple times. And I moved up to Maine when I was, like, 20 or something like that. And you guys came up and played up there.
Like Zoots or...
Some
brew company.
Oh, the Stone Coast Brewery.
Stone Coast Brewery.
Room. Surprisingly came up to Maine a bunch of times with various projects, you know, with the Nels Klein Singers.
Yeah, well, there's people up there that are very conducive to some provocative music.
Totally,
Which and people don't know. Again, people have weird opinions of Maine who have never been there.
Yeah.
It's a happening place. One time I was there in the summer, it was 100 degrees. Only time ever. And I've been there in the fall, man. They got the orange, yellow, and red going.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Wild. A lot of colors in the trees. Yeah. We don't have that in Cali. We got evergreens and cactus.
Yeah.
Wild colors in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And Ulrich. You a music man at all?
Not really. I like to listen to it.
Well, you told me how many Roskilde festivals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
11 years in a row.
Well, look, for every dude making music, there's got to be a listener. So it's important.
I take that place a lot.
Yeah, big time. Big time. So 11 Roskilde festivals. Now, Roskilde is a giant-ass festival in Denmark. 100,000 people.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they always got lots of bands.
Like the second largest in Europe, I think.
Yeah, maybe. And long history, too.
Mm-hmm. The 35 years.
Yeah.
When is that?
It's usually in the summer.
It's first week of July.
First week of July. And a lot of times rain.
So it's a whole week long?
The music is 4 days, but there's
four days.
Full week of like festival stuff, camping, and events, and like
cultural
happenings, and theater groups, open mic stuff.
Right. An England version is kind of Glastonbury.
Yeah, that's like double the size. Mm-hmm. That's huge. I've never been there.
Yeah, I played there. There's a lot of rain at that, too.
It's funny because...
More rain.
Roskilde has this reputation of always being rainy and muddy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, every once in a while it is, but it's just something that's cultivated by the media. It's a good story that people get mudded up all the time.
Yeah.
But it's really hot.
We were there, it rained, but when we played, the sun came out. Stooges brought out the sun, so that was good.
It was
a great gig. It was great play for the Danish cats. Plus, they get a lot of foreign cats, too, that come to the festival.
Half the tickets are sold abroad.
Yeah. See, half.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Obviously, mostly Sweden, Norway, and Germany. Mm-hmm. But you get people from...
Germany's right next door.
Yeah.
Wow. And Sweden, too, is real close. In fact, there's a bridge, huh? Yeah. Or a tunnel?
Yeah, both.
Yeah, really? Both.
Yeah. Whoa. People say, whoa, it's not that far. It's like...
No, it's not.
10K or something?
But again, you know, I remember telling people when I first played in Europe, that, hey, I played in Holland. Well, ain't that a town in Switzerland?
Yeah.
In
your,
you know,
I get that.
Or it's Amsterdam, it's one town. I don't even know it's a land. Yeah, geography is kind of lacking in U.S. schools. Yeah, right, it's a town in Sweden.
Yeah, whatever, I don't care.
The flags look close, they're just different colors.
Yeah.
Right, Norway, Sweden, and even Iceland.
Yeah, okay. Got
and Finland, too, is close. But Finland, much different with the language.
Finland is their own little world.
Right. Maybe close a little to Hungary and Estonia, maybe, but not Scandi.
It's like our buffer zone towards Russia. We don't really consider it part of Scandinavia. I don't consider it part of Scandinavia. They have their own little culture and language, and it's like...
Well, for some reason, they were... You know, looking for flags and said, like, these guys are next door. Let's just make it a different
color. It's one of those countries that all through their history they've been occupied by either Sweden or Russia. So, I don't know, at some point they, I don't know, tipped to one side.
Right. Like, it's been its own country since maybe 1917. Not that long.
Not that long.
Yeah. But it's an interesting place. I played there a lot. Yeah.
Dark and cold there in the winter?
No, I was lucky I was in the... summertime, but I know long winters. The most north I've been though was Norway and Tromsø.
Yeah,
where there's a university.
Summer or winter?
It was in summer, and it was sun never went down.
Yeah, eternal sunshine. That is so awesome. I really want to go and see that.
It was a trip, and there's a school up there. I think it's the most north university.
Yeah, it's a pretty big city.
Yeah,
for that kind of altitude.
I had a polar museum. So you could, for a long time, explorers were Dutch because a black plague had hit Norway. Norway got depopulated for a long time. They had to redo it. And the Dutch thought, there was a rumor that you could get to Indonesia. If you went north, there was a hole in the poles or something, you could just get down there. And so they were exploring up there. learned a lot of interesting things. Cats who'd go for... hunting on these icebergs and stuff, and they'd always go in threes because, you know, twos. The guy told me who was giving me the tour, was a nice cat named Tor. They become the married couple, and I guess start fighting and shit. Yeah. So you always had to have at least three. <You know. laughs> To keep the sanity. They'd be there for months, you know, just iced in, looking for these seals and walruses and things to get skins on. Bizarre lifestyle. Hard. And then there's a people up there actually a native indigenous people called Somis. I guess there's kind of a name for them, Laplanders. Mm. But Laps kind of like patches on the clothes, so they don't really like to be called that. Foreigners can say that because they don't know, but if you live up there, yeah, they like Somi. Mm. And in fact, that's kind of like Finland's name. They don't say Finland, they say Somi. Somi, yeah.
But
but that's different than the people.
The Laps. Some people?
Yeah.
That's Norway, Sweden, and Finland. It's not tied to one country.
Right, right. They were the original people in the north.
Whereas Lapland is just a part of Norway. So that's like saying California.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Not necessarily an Indian because you live in California, but you can be an Indian and a Californian.
Right.
So the same thing, you can be a Laplander and a Samoan, or you can be a Laplander and a European or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right. One's a subset of the other.
Not really. They're overlapping.
Yeah, they're all overlapping. But one's bigger, European, bigger set, subset. Would be the set, and then the subset would be Laplander.
Yeah, you can do that.
Right. Humans are into like these right, you go to the record store, right, you gotta know which bin to look in, right? Oh, which music do I like, what genre? Right. Yeah. It's not just all music, right? In fact, I heard some of that music, it's trippy.
Oh, really?
A lot of songs about reindeers.
Oh man.
Yeah, I guess.
What's it sound like?
Trippy. It's trippy. Yeah, a lot of not a lot of electronic instruments. And in their language, too, is trip, trip. Steve McKay, in fact, a cat who's into that indigenous music, gave him a CD and we were listening to it. Man, it's a trip.
Yeah.
I dug it. Interesting about music because it's a timeless fabric to connect humans. But I'm interested. You just heard about Couchsurfer.com on the internet.
Honestly, I don't remember who told me about it. I think some person just, you know, randomly mentioned it.
Yeah.
As a concept, you know, couchsurfing as a concept, not as the website.
Yeah.
Just the idea of couchsurfing is older than the website.
Yeah, of course.
So,
like I told you, my touring experience.
Yeah, exactly. And that's couchsurfing, even though you didn't use the website. So, I think somebody just told me that, and I was kind of, you know, searching for stuff like that.
Now, were you scared?
Yeah, first time I was scared shitless. Not so much when I put on the crystal. I thought, that'd be so cool. But then, you know, once you get
the reality,
you get the contact, and you're waiting for this guy to pick you up, and you're standing in the middle of this small ass city in the middle of the outback in Australia, and this van pulls up with it has like DJ Dobo on the side, and it's like falling apart, and like, get into this sketchy car, and they drive back to their house. Yeah, it was a bit scary.
Yeah,
I've only had good experiences.
Yeah, great.
So awesome.
Great.
So awesome.
What about you, Adam?
So, what's the question?
How did you about the scene, and once you got into it, were you scared?
I found out my friend Hannah was using the website for a year or two, and she told me about it. And at first, I joined it, but I didn't use it at all. I just kind of was checking it out. But just recently when I decided to go traveling, back in late October, early November, I decided to, you know, fully commit and started meeting folks involved. And you have like this whole system of like references that you have, and that's kind of how it works. And that's kind of how you know, like more or less, that your host or your person you're staying with, you know, is pretty cool, you know.
Because when I go from here, I leave the peak of reference and say, she was real nice and she put me up for 3 nights and we hung out and she took me to this crazy...
It's like a review.
So, write a few lines about what my experiences were.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. If I need a host somewhere, search for them and look at the references and see, okay, people wrote this and this and this about them. So that's kind of how the trust thing works.
Yeah.
Right, right. Now, do you guys put your own experiences up on the net for people to read?
That's what
like diaries?
Some people do, like Mark
that cat was doing it, right? The guy from England was doing it. So you follow it, or is it just personal things going up in your head?
I have my own blog, but it's not connected to couchsurfing at all. It's a separate thing.
I think it's just what kids do these days. Everybody just has a blog.
Yeah, right?
I have a blog.
But
I
don't. It's reflecting your life, so yeah. Since you're on the tour, there's got to be some of that
coming through.
Yeah.
Tons, yeah.
Not connected to sites so much, but still, you're letting folks know of your journey.
Because
I think that would help build confidence, too.
Yeah.
If they heard about these things, wow, if he's doing that, maybe I could try that.
Totally. Honestly, I'm not really doing it for other people, I'm doing it for myself.
Just I know, but
when I come back.
But I'm telling you, maybe a secondary, a collateral effect.
Yeah.
Could be benefit to, for other people.
Yeah.
Of course, it'd be pretty kind of maybe too much ego to think I'm doing this for other people. I'm telling you, but from an outsider, I think it helps.
Because
I started about 10 years ago starting tour diaries when I went on tour.
Tour diaries?
Tour. Like I'm going out to play all these gigs. Yeah, I'm going to write about it. And mainly my idea was to get people excited about, wow, this idiot can go and see shit. I should go see shit.
And
you know, and be involved because this stuff of getting all the information on a one-way, you know, like a telephone with no talking part, which I consider the television, is scary.
Yeah.
Like I said, you get this sense, I'm an expert. I saw a show on that. No, you're not an expert. You're an expert on seeing that show with the commercials in between.
Right.
You're not an expert on that subject. And so we got to get rid of this. And even if you have first-hand experience, you can go back there a month later and things could be completely different.
Right.
This is life.
Yeah.
This is life. It's for living.
Yeah.
Documented that moment? Yeah.
What did they say? Expert are people who made all the mistakes they can make or something like that?
That's a good one. You call that aphorism.
Yeah.
Aphorism.
Yeah. Some kind of... I was reading a book with Francis Picabia, a Dada artist, and he had this thing, poem and aphorisms. Like he writes aphorisms. I thought aphorisms were like things that people agree or... Kind of good. Say you write them like this will be good for everyone to quote. Yeah, this will be good. You know, don't let the meatloaf. He wrote our aphorism for the our daily aphorism. No, interesting. Adam.
Yeah.
You got pretty good English, but. Probably because you grew up in the U.S. Ulrich, you are English. Really good.
Thank you.
But I've known the last few years, I've noticed in Scandinavia, really good English.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? Schools?
I've been talking a lot about this with people when I'm traveling.
Yes.
Basically comes down to three things, I think. First thing, it's sad, but it's true. We're not dubbing the movies, and we get all the entertainment from America. Which, you know, when you're 5 years old, you start seeing American movies with, you know, people talking in slang and stuff. So that just automatically errs into me.
But there's the Danish subtitles going on the bottom.
Yeah, subtitles, but we only translate, like, cartoons and kids' movies.
Yeah.
Which is fair enough, but I would never watch a dub movie. I hate that shit.
Germany.
Yeah, so that's why Germany and France and Italy and stuff, they don't really...
Right.
Plus, Danish and English is... Germanic languages.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of, you know, muscle to use.
There's some roots.
Same sounds.
Yeah.
Second part. And third part is that Denmark is a very small country. So if you want to make it, you have to go outside the borders. Be it music, industry,
business,
marketing, whatever you want to do. If you want to make it.
Prostitution.
Basically, I mean, anything you want to do, if you want to make money, you have to go across the border.
Right.
So that's another incentive. I think that's the three main factors that makes most Scandinavian people, in general, Sweden, Norway.
Because it's not just the grammar and vocabulary. You guys know the slang, you know the culture things. And
exactly.
That's from the movies and stuff.
Yeah. It basically is. On this trip, I learned a lot of cool slang.
Let's hear some of it.
mostly Kiwi stuff. G'day,
that's
mate.
Great. So you bring it home and you educate your comrades.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to see what people think when I come home and hear them speak English again. It's probably going to be totally different.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Adam?
30.
Wow. That's great. So what do you do for a living?
I'm a computer programmer.
Ah.
From a big consultancy company.
Yeah.
Last few years I was a preschool teacher.
Oh.
Worked at a coffee shop too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the Holland kind of coffee shop?
No.
The U.S. They won't cut us that slack. They're a little uptight over things like that, right, Brother Matt? What about chow?
Food?
Yeah.
So you just eating a burrito?
No, but around you on your trip.
Honestly, I haven't been that much experimenting with it. I mean, I've been in hospital.
But it's been okay, huh?
It's been okay. I've been doing most of my own cooking, like just pasta and red cheese and tomatoes and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the coolest things was that I met in Wellington, which is the capital of New Zealand.
Sure.
I was couchsurfing. There was another couple of Americans there from New Orleans. They live in Georgia or something down there. And they were into this whole raw food life. I had never heard about that before.
So they
like raw food. They're not allowed to have anything that is cooked, boiled, been in an oven, or processed in any kind of way.
Right, right.
So they only eat like vegetables, oils, nuts, and salad. And so they cooked us a meal all raw. That was really amazing.
Wow.
To try that.
Wow, yeah. I think I had some of that before. Adam, your chow thing?
I've just mostly been cooking. When I went through the Southwest, I had the most amazing Mexican food and tacos I've ever had. You know, they don't have tacos up in Maine.
Right, right.
And if they do, they're like, $10 or some ridiculous thing, you know? And so, Las Cruces, New Mexico, $1 tacos, the best tacos I've ever had.
Yeah.
Fucking cheap and great, yeah. So.
So the chow thing's been good.
Yeah, it's
been by traveling.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally good.
Because, if you did the puck, Booger King and Crap Donald, end up sick after a while.
Yeah.
It's not tasting the different flavors of America.
Yeah, not at all. In fact, I think they designed that stuff so it is always the same taste.
Yeah. I think I've been eating out maybe 10 times something on my whole trip.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, I've been going or at people's places.
Pit and pads, you're staying at. Yeah, yeah. That's great. I think it's a great concept.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the first hour of February 15th, 2009. What from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. February 15th, 2009. It's the second hour of the What from Pedro Show.
Yeah. own shit.
I'm here for a reason that ain't even a beating.
started the second hour off with Cat Jack Dance, which is an unknown group of 200 Bali men singing what is kind of what, the monkey chant. And we have a new guest to join us, Mr. Tuan.
Hey, welcome.
And Tuan knows about some monkey chant stuff, right?
A little bit. Not too much. I just have some friends that are deeply involved with it. A friend who's comes from a real wealthy background. He just wanted to spend his life learning Kachak. Went to Bali. Learned a few things. Now he just travels all over the United States touring with an ever-growing group of, I don't know what you call them, followers, fellow performers.
Right, it's almost like a cult, brother.
Monkey chanting.
Yeah, it's a trip. It's a trip. They do it all over the place. They do it at Burning Man a lot. That's where they really started flourishing.
You don't know much about it? We've got to get on our Wikipedia thing, huh?
Yeah, actually, I know a little bit more about it.
Yeah, what's that?
It apparently is not really a traditional chant or dance. It's based on traditional stuff, but I think I read once that it was developed by like a Westerner in the 30s, kind of to help promote tourism in Bali. Like the actual kind of dance, it's like 200 men kind of are in a sitting down in a circle, and they're doing lots of hand motions and and so I think it was kind of developed as like kind of a tourist attraction, but it's based on traditional stuff, and from what I've heard, it's incredible. Just listening to it, you know, it blows me away. Just the different, you know.
Talk about listening to them. When it came on and I was hearing it, in my mind, I heard this before. Immediately, I heard it in the late 70s. Was used by the pop group in an intro of their second album, a song called Forces of Oppression, album called How Much Longer Do We Tolerate Mass Murder? And that's what this started with. I knew it was some indigenous people that they were working the thing off, but that it sounds like the exact same recording. I know Mark Stewart. I should ask him. That's a trip. That was a mind blow. So that's what Adam picked. He's been on his couch tour. He's got some records, right?
Yeah, I've been stopping in thrift stores along the way and just finding records and found some really good
ones.
Where'd
you get that one?
This one I found this in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
New Mexico,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, where I also found cheap tacos.
Right. And then we heard Let Go by Sutra Pumo. Maybe like Karma Sutra. And Ulrich picked this one.
Yeah, it's kind of a underground thing from Copenhagen. It's not really out in the mainstream publication. So it's basically an old childhood friend of mine who started this band.
Yeah.
And it's just like a crossover metal hip-hop thing. And they're kind of reconfiguring right now. So when I left Denmark, the two lead singers that you heard were actually gone from the band. But apparently they're touring now, so I don't really know what they're doing.
But there's probably like people who have replaced them.
Yeah, also, or it's just an instrumental band.
Or it's
band.
Instrumental
that
band.
Be cool.
There was a lot more of that in the 80s. Yeah. Europe rock bands didn't have singers. Instrumental bands. Some of them. Then we heard two bands I'm going to be playing with next month. The first one was Cat Party with Jigsaw Thoughts. I'm going to play in San Juan Capistrano. I haven't played there. Or what they call it, Cabo Beach. Yeah. People there call it. And then we heard Up Shit's Creek by Stab City. And I played with them at Harold's place here in Pedro. And I think they're coming, what's the 20th? Thursday? Today's the 15th. Is it Friday?
Real quick.
And who knows the calendar?
I got one right here. Coming up on my computer. What's,
yeah.
What day are you looking
20.
At?
20 is Friday.
Friday.
Friday. Okay, so Friday, Stab City's going to be here at Harold's place. This is old biker bar. It started having punk gigs. Kind of trippy for
just 20
Pedro
blocks
people.
Down the road.
Yeah. And but I'm going to be playing with them in Pasadena on March 11th. I think it's March 28th for the gig with Cat Party. But just look on the Who page and let's see. Some interesting young men playing with the old punk guy. And with Missing Men, first gigs with Missing Men since the summer.
Cool.
I played with them.
Tom and Raul.
In fact, Raul, he's going on some Killer Dreamer tour. A short one, 8 days or something.
Oh, cool.
And Tom, I saw Friday, he set up that thing for me and Raymond. So, all kind of close together. Interesting thing, besides knowing a lot about Monkey Chat people, Twan also knows one of the founders of the Couchsurfing.com thing.
Yeah, Danny in Toronto.
Yeah. So tell us what you know. You don't know a lot, but
I don't know that she's a founder, but she's pretty high up, and she helps organize all these events, and I don't know exactly what her duties are, but she's I just met her once again at Burning Man, just a random meeting. She looked exactly like my ex-girlfriend. I mean, splitting image. She came over and bummed a smoke from me, and we just had a chat, and I found out all the shit about her. It was cool.
But do you know something about the organization? You said it was started off as an idea.
It started out as just this idea of, like, you know, wayward travelers were always looking for a couch to crash on. Like you were saying, back in the early punk days, all the punkers would just crash out of people's
tours. That's how you toured.
Right. And so you got to save dollars, right? So same kind of principle. And so this idea, this couch surfing, is based on that idea. And so they started a website, and this turned into a global, huge thing. They had no idea.
That's why these two gentlemen are here.
I think it's totally cool.
It's righteous. Cool.
And if I see Danny again, I'm going to be stoked to tell her that, that this has happened.
And we're, you know, actually, Peaks brought two other ones.
Yeah.
One from England, one from Italy.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
so
it's
this
huge.
Brother Matt's got something to say here. What's a Mike Phelps thing? Or?
Oh, yeah, but he's still an Olympic champion, right?
But, so tell Danny we're putting out the word, because I think it's a great idea for more people to visit more lands and let those lands see them.
Oh,
to
yeah.
me, can only mean good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's totally econo mode, you know?
And you know me about econo. The way you do
it. You got to do it right.
Okay. And, well, it's time for Brother Matt and his spin cycle.
Cool. We'll be right back.
yeah, this place, I mean, basically, is so fucking cool because you get over there, and suddenly you get surrounded by people all over there. They are drunk, and they give you a glass with whatever. Anyway, it's alcohol, so you drink it, and it's slam dance everywhere.
Thank you.
right, Brother Matt.
Yeah.
Much respect. Yeah. Thank you for your latest spin cycle.
Thank you.
Got a little dance hall reverb there by not shutting off the monitor. What was the spirit of your inspiration?
A little international. Start with some Nortec, some Slavic Soul Party, and then come on back to the USA with a little good down-home madness.
Some neck break.
Neck
breaker.
All right.
End of the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show, February 15, 2009. Hold tight for hour three. February 15, 2009. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Well, y'all, we are the motherfucking Stooges. We are a freak of fucking nature. And here's a freaky little song about a really fucking weird year. Wow.
Watch from Pedro show. Start off the third hour with the Stooges live in New Orleans at Voodoo Fest in 2004, I think.
Three.
Yeah, 2003.
Late 03.
Yeah, now I remember. Because I played this gig with no shirt on. And now, in these days, you know, Ig asked me to not wear flannel. I said, sure. You know, I wore a dress for Perry.
No problem.
So, what I tried to do was, no, it was kind of like caftan, doorman, Morocco or something. What I tried to do, in fact, was wear a different T-shirt for every gig. So, I'm not a big T-shirt man. I don't have many. I like buttons. So I would go looking for one, and I found this orange one, plain orange T-shirt for this gig. We're about to go on stage, and he goes to me, well, Mike, you're looking kind of orange. I said, yeah. He said, well, why don't you show these people you mean business and go out there with no shirt like me? Like, well, it's been about 20 years since I played without my shirt. And he said, ah, come on. I said, okay. So I did it. Scotty said to me, you're going to have to pay me $10,000 for me to take my shirt off. No. But, you know, so I did it. And it was kind of a bledge gig. It was one of those radio, you know, whatever. I think at Mississippi Rivers when they change over from W's to K's. So I wonder if they're a W or a K station. Yeah. East Bank, West Bank. Yeah, actually, I think most of the town is on the...
So this,
well, you know, it goes into Delta there.
They didn't come to see you. They came to see Marilyn Manson, is that right?
Hmm. I don't know. But it was... you could tell they were people that watched a lot of videos and got their music from that at that time, you know. So Ig was a little fired up. Some one of the security men was coming on with the Butch pose, and they called him out on that.
Well, he got
Ig was great. Ig was singing and dancing, and every gig he gave always gives his all. He's incredible, amazing sensei for me. And the Ashton Brothers were playing on fire. I mean, that band always went for it.
I read always. That Ronnie would be, like, ask questions, you know, at all these festivals you played as to whether he ever, you know, got to see the other bands that were on the bill, because you played with some pretty good groups before that preceded your act. And he's all, no, man, I got my head into the gig. You know, I'm in this trailer just getting my head prepared for the show. So, serious intensity.
Yeah, it was. It was every time. It was the only shake. He'd come up to the stage, you know, up to the stairs, and then he'd look at us. Everybody ready? Everybody, let's go! I mean, it'd be like this.
So he'd like give
bonsai
the final
charge.
Signal.
I mean, it was crazy.
He'd give the signal then, right? You wouldn't dare go.
It
wasn't
more
stage
like a signal. No, he'd That's have cool. us all together and make sure we were together and ready cool. and on the mark, and then. Go for it, man. He, incredible work ethic. And then to have that with that music from the Ashton Brothers, intense experience for me. 5.5 years.
Well, someone in the audience, I tell you, I people can cover those songs, or Iggy could have other bands do them, but there's just something so pure and mathematical almost and surgical. I mean, it just eviscerates your brain.
Seen it from the source.
Yeah, it is, but it's just so... Well, if you didn't see him, then too bad, I guess. But we got one song here. Anyway.
And then we heard Machine Gun by Banyan. When was this, last year?
San Diego.
It's when Buddy Miles passed away.
Yeah, April 11th.
I think I just got the news, so I were playing a gig, and I said, I want to do Machine Gun. I don't know.
That's perfect for now.
Kind of.
That song now is what I look forward to when
yeah,
I see you guys. You know.
I like now so much. That's neat about you getting to meet him, Adam. Now, last time Banyan played, we went up to San Francisco. And with us, actually it wasn't Banyan for that one. We did three Banyan gigs, and then a fourth one was in San Francisco, and Perk couldn't make. So John Molo played the drums, but on the way up, Bob went with us.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting experience.
Did you go?
I was
there. Peek was at the show.
She was at the gig. She went up with Nels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she missed the festivities in the van. But
well, who was the square?
Tiffany.
Yeah.
Square.
The no smoking zone.
Anyway, Mr. Herman Green was also in the boat. He was playing tenor sax and flute, and a man 78 years old, Memphis, Tennessee. I got the chance to talk with him. Actually, I was driving, so Bob.
Well, what's interesting about it was that I think somebody started asking him some questions when we were going to pick up Tiff, and he told this great story about stealing a guitar with B.B. King, the 50s, and that's when I said, we got to go get your thing, Juan, and record this.
That's right, we went back to Pedro.
We drove all the way back to Pedro, and I heard a lot of whining, so this better sound good. But what's
you know what it sounds like? I floated it to you.
Yeah, I've heard it, and what I will say as a qualifier or just additional background is that...
Well, there's two segments.
There's two segments, and during this time, Herman got a call that is from his daughter that she was in the hospital, and it hit him hard. And you can especially hear that on the second segment, which I think he might have made another phone call because we fueled up the boat, and he was a different man. But you can hear it, which is amazing because here I am interviewing him, and I couldn't even hear him, and he's sitting right next to me.
He was
the microphone picked it up.
He was speaking very
low. And fascinating man. And later that night, somebody made some comment, you know, that he was doing his Beale Street thing on stage, but you got to realize this man had just lost his wife, his daughter's in the hospital, and he's 78 doing his Beale Street thing is maybe not unlike you, Mike, at 78, saying start your own band and maybe a little more long-winded with the thing. Is it was very heartfelt, and it was an honor to be along with him, and I didn't realize what a deep background he had as an educator as well.
Yeah. And coming from a musical family.
Connections to Al Green Sr., you know, Booker T. His father played with Herman's father. So we're going way back in the Memphis family tree.
Yeah, so anyway, we're going to play you the spiel here. And we'll talk some more after, Bob. January 10th, 2009. We're in a boat going towards San Francisco, just left San Pedro. We're on the Harbor Freeway, and I'm going to put this on Bob Steyer's lap. Forward to him is Willie Wallman. Starboard is Mr. Herman Green.
How you doing, Bob?
Good.
Good. I'm glad to be back out in Los Angeles again. And I'm headed to San Francisco, where I lived there for almost 3.5 years. And I was a house band to Black Hawk. Plus, we was talking about the International Settlement, which was a great block of what you call classic strip joints.
So is this in North Beach, or?
It wasn't just at the bottom of North Beach. But it was down near Market Street, right downtown near, there. And I used to play there with a group in one of the strip clubs. This was in 1955, and I played down there for about 6 months. Then somebody told me that I need to go and talk to Helen and John Credo that owned the Blackhawk, and I went and talked with them, and they hired me as a house band. And I got a chance to meet a lot of great musicians, all the way from Cal Jada, Dave Brubeck, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Chico Hamilton. It was just so many great musicians that came through that, and I was there for 2.5 years as house band director. So I got a chance to meet a lot of beautiful people.
Was that
that a pretty lively time with the music scene?
Yes.
Pivotal time, or?
Yes. San Francisco was full of jazz at that time. As a matter of fact, they had built a new jazz club on North Beach, as you was asking about, and it was called the Jazz Workshop. And when they opened it, I was the house band to open that up, and then Cannonball Adderley followed me in 2 weeks later. So, yes, it was a lot of jazz. And after I was played, it's called Bop City. It was down on Post Street, and I just run the band down there after hours. And I got a chance to meet the likes of Dinah Washington. It came down, it was like a jam session. After everybody got to plan the shows, Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra, it was just a wall-to-wall talent that would come down because they had beautiful breakfasts. And it was a place to hear jazz and have breakfast and everything. We played that six nights a week as well.
It's a kind of a semi-private scene. My mom talked about those jam sessions. Was it just musicians, or it depends?
No, it was open to the public. But just a lot of musicians came. Matter of fact, that's where I first met Wes Montgomery and his brothers, man. And then they were the Master Sounds, and then I got a chance to work with the Montgomery brothers. Yes.
So with these after hours, I mean, this go all night long?
Oh, yeah. You start at 2:30 and you play to 6 o'clock. And then daylight, I brought up the sun many times. And what we used to do, though, because we were just making a living just playing music. And when we got through playing at Bop City, we'd go out to the ocean, man, and lay around out on the beach. It's about 12 or 1 o'clock and we'd go home and go to bed.
That was like a good life.
Herman,
yeah.
You're from Memphis. How did you end up in San Francisco?
Okay, I was in the Army, and when they finished my tour of duty and career, they docked in Camp Stormont, I believe it was, and I fell in love with San Francisco, so I went home and lived with my family for about 3 weeks, bought me a brand new car, and told them, I said, I'm headed to California. And that's how I ended up in San Francisco. I saw these beautiful houses on the hill in different colors.
Yeah.
Pink, white, blue. It was just something about that city that was magnifying to me. I didn't want to leave it. So I came back and I stayed there for 3.5 years. And that's when I first got together with Lionel Hampton as well. And Blakey, jazz messengers, talked me into coming back to New York. Said I went back to New York after that to play with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers.
Now, when was that? What year are we talking
about? That was in 1959.
Can we go back before? Like, how'd you get started with music?
Okay.
Memphis.
I got started with music in Memphis with my grandmother, who was a classical pianist and vocal teacher at St. Louis University. My mom played piano. My dad played. He played with W.C. Handel, as a matter of fact. Then my Uncle Al Sr., which is Al Jackson Jr., the Booker T. and MGs, was the drummer for the Booker T. and MGs. That was my first cousin. But I came up to a musical family all my life. My mom, my Aunt Thelma, played in Sedalia, Missouri, when Fat Waller and Joplin, Scott Joplin, all the Strat piano players was there. And so that's... I didn't hear nothing but music all day long.
You wired right into the family tree there.
So what was the first thing you played and how old were you?
Okay, I started playing piano, which I hated it. But I thought that was for girls to play. You know, the guys be out playing marbles and playing cowboy and Indian, and I got to sit up there and practice that. Hey, the car was there. Hey, come on out, man. Let's play. My grandmother said, no, you sit down. You ain't going nowhere.
How old were you?
I was 5.
Now, who was your teacher?
What year was that?
That was in 1935.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your grandma?
Was she?
She made me learn the piano.
Was she teaching?
Was she a teacher?
Yeah. She taught classical voice and and classical piano in St. Louis University. Yeah. So I, like I said, you know, I hated piano. But when I got to high school, because they didn't have middle school bands when I was growing up, you know, all the way up to the eighth grade, you didn't have no music but like a glee club singing or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
What town is this?
Memphis, Tennessee. And I, when I got to high school, I couldn't, well, let me go back a minute. I also picked up guitar during this period of time and started playing guitar.
How'd that come around?
Huh?
How'd that come around?
Because there was some musicians that was playing for the church and everything, and then I got interested in the guitar, and they bought me a guitar and got me attention. I started playing that. But here's the catch. When you get to high school, you can't march with a piano. You can't march with a guitar. It's like to have a horn.
Yeah. Oh, so this is how you move.
So that's
staff.
How, yeah, and my first instrument was trombone. And then I went from trombone to trumpet. And then I just couldn't seem to get it going like I wanted to. So then
marching trombone probably easier with the bigger mouthpiece.
Yeah, but it wasn't for me.
Okay.
So I told her I wanted to play a saxophone. So
switch to the woodwinds, huh?
Yeah, so she went and bought me a saxophone. And I've been with it ever since.
So you're playing in the marching band in high school on the sax.
Yeah, I was.
When did you start jamming?
In my sophomore year.
Okay.
They had the seniors had the jazz orchestra covered, so I had to wait till they graduated. So then my band director said, Herman, why don't you come up there and practice with the jazz orchestra? So that I needed a first alto player. I was playing alto then. I said, okay, come down. But I had a history class at the site. But thank God, Professor Nat D. Williams, which was a great name in WDIE when it first came to Memphis. He was a DJ down there, but he taught history. And he knew that I was interested in music, so he would give me my home assignments and everything and let me go rehearse with the jazz orchestra at that period of time, as long as I brought my work in and everything. And then I came, like I said, from educators anyway, so it wasn't hard for me to get them to help me with my homework and stuff. So I got to high school, my sophomore, junior, and senior years playing in the jazz orchestra and the marching band as well.
So it sounds like a lot of the educators actually were musicians too, so you had that nice overlap that a lot of cities might not have.
Yeah, like I said, well, see, in Memphis was at this time, it was not integrated. That's
oh, yeah,
one.
That's right.
That's not
the
40s,
right?
Yeah, and we only had four high schools, which was Melrose, Hamilton, Manassas, and Booker T. Washington, which was my alma mater. And they had two band directors. One taught 2 days at Manassas, which was my band director, and he taught 3 days at Booker T. Washington. And Professor McLennan, he taught 2 days at Melrose and 3 days at Hamilton. So we all had two band directors. And
wow.
And they used to alternate between four black schools.
Now, do you think that it was actually ended up being an advantage to have a couple different approaches?
We not only had on hands instructors in school, but there was a lot of good professional musicians that was older, and by the teaching that we had gotten, we could go, and my mom would let us go and play with different bands. I was 17 or 15 years old when I recorded Walking the Dog with Rufus Thomas.
Wow.
And I was still in high school. And then
now, how did that come about, recording that?
Well, they used to have what they call the Jubilee, like what they call Memphis in May now, where they get all four of the high school bands together, and then they all the glee clubs and all the dancers and all of them put on a program in May in concert. And so that's how all this came about. But then again, like I said, Rufus Thomas used to coordinate a lot of these activities that they would put on, and along with the band directors. And in other words, they would go out and grab the dancers. We had the glee club directors who would take care of the voices, and we had the band directors take care of the band. And so we had hands-on professionalism in high school. Can we take a break from that?
I will say no.
Cool, man.
Wow, that's
a good start.
It is good.
I didn't know you started before you were on.
You get her fired up again.
Okay, we're back to the Rufus Thomas.
I was saying about Rufus used to coordinate the ballet every summer in May. And he would teach dancing, blue club, vocal teacher, and the professor had the bands, conducting the bands. We culminated all four high schools together, put on this show every May. And Rufus was a very influential people in my life as well. So I started playing with him, and when I was 15 years old, because we knew that, parents knew that Rufus would look after us, so they didn't mind us going out playing the gigs and stuff, because we always had him as a supervisor or some other main person as a supervisor. So that's how I got started in the business fairly early in high school. Like I was saying, we were playing with Fingers Newborn Senior in this band. He was 17, 18 years old, still in high school. We used to play over Plantation Inn in West Memphis. And that was the longest gig, and then we had to go to school the next morning. Played from 10 to 4 in the morning.
Wow. Now, how old was Rufus Thomas at this time?
He was back in his 30s.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He had children and everything. He was a full-time person.
Now,
we had the time and had great experiences music wise, you know. So when we got ready for to go out in the real world, we was already well seasoned because we had been in the plan for 2 or 3 years. We had a lot of band back in those days. Most of the clubs had black bands and most of the white clubs, and we played with different musicians as well.
With Rufus, did you, besides record, I mean, were you playing in a band with him, or did he help place you in with other musicians?
Oh, I played in Rufus' band, and my uncle Al Senior, he had a big orchestra. Played in his orchestra. And that was several bands playing around town. Black people had his band, Andrew Moody's band, and different bands we could play with. And I kept us pretty busy as a teenager. So when I got ready to go to New York, I was already a seasoned professional, which was good. New York was hard to cut into. But the union would let you work on a steady job when you first get there. You had to have a waiting period to come out and work on the same job no more than 2 nights a week. You know, if they go to another place or play or something like that. But you couldn't work a steady job until after you waited 6 months.
And was that a New York City?
Yeah, New York City.
They had a special.
Look late or two.
thing about it, those were a million musicians in New York City.
A million.
Musicians and directors, being some citizens and telephone directors. The main musician in New York. Play the scene.
So how did one end up in New York City, and how did you feel? I mean, was that in...
Well, I had they used to bring bands down. I saw the Gullington at the Palace Theater. I saw Lucky Millington, the big band. I saw Count Basie. Saw Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. They used to bring jazz players around and help them. That's what inspired me to be. I want to get to New York because Memphis wasn't offering that kind of quality of music and that much work. So you had to go to New York to try to make it to Chicago somewhere. It's not enough to make a full living on. So the band came to Dallas and they said they needed a saxophone player. So I went and joined the band with them. They said they were going to New York City and up in Toronto, Canada. So I told them I'd go. When they headed back south, I got off in New York.
This is like a magnetic pull.
Yeah.
Did somebody come along and take you under their wing there?
Oh, yeah. It was a gentleman that I met. He came to his band and told me that he had a steady job for a saxophone player in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And he asked me, did I want to come down and play? I told him I would. So his name was Sonny Bridges, a piano player. So I went and played with him about 2 years while I got my toehold in New York, because it was only a 45-minute drive from New York City. Anyway, so that was good for me because I was right there in the area.
So what year would this be at this point?
This is 1950. Up to 52. And I got drafted and had to come home and go to the Army in 53. And I stayed there in the Army for 2 years. And after that, came back, and like I said, I fell in love with San Francisco. That's where we docked at when we came back from overseas. And I came home and visited my parents for 3 weeks, and then I left and came back to San Francisco. That's when I stayed there. 55 to 59, and was in house band for 3 years. Got a chance to see a lot of great musicians that came through the Blackhawk. Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, Shelly Mann, Jerry Mulligan. K.R.J., Dave Brubeck, there's a whole array of musicians that come to them in the period of time that I was there. So I had a lot of fun getting to see these guys and play. They had to play on the same stage with them and everything, hard like it. It's just a host of people. So it was fun. I had a good time and a great experience for me. And Art Blakey told me I need to come to New York. And so I told him that I was ready to leave San Francisco because I was still working steady at the Black Hawk. When the Black Hawk finally closed down, then I made up my mind. I said, well, I guess I'll go try New York City again. So I did. And that's where I stayed up until 67, I believe it was. Then I had to come home because my mom got sick. So when I came home, I stayed here for a while, and then after she passed, I went to Birmingham, Alabama, and stayed there for about 3 years. So that's where it goes. And then it came back to Memphis, and I've been there ever since. And put together some wonderful groups in Memphis then. Like I had the Green Machine, and then I had the Calvin Newborn playing guitar. There was some of the young kids that I was teaching at Memphis State, James Williams, Muswell Miller, Don Brown, and a host of trumpet players and drummers and all. So it was a great experience to be able to teach these young kids. I taught college for about 30 years before I retired. So there I am now, out here with Willie Wallman, Mike Watts. And so now I'm having fun again. So it's been good to me. Music has been one of the greatest things that ever happened to me when I became a musician. I went to Carnegie Hall with Lionel Hampton's band, played with many other bands, so I'm still at it.
Was it sort of a natural thing, being from Memphis, to get into the educational side of continuing?
Well, the way it happened, when I came home, Dr. Ferguson was the head of the music department, jazz department, and he was doing a concert, and some friends introduced him to me, and then he asked me if I would like to be on the program, and I told him that, sure, you know, okay, you know, if he wanted me to. So he put me on one of his concerts, and they do about 4 or 5 a year, and I did one. Then I did a lecture at Lamar and Owen College, which was a black college, but they didn't have no jazz. And so the head of the music department, she asked me would I like to come over and start teaching part-time and try to help get some jazz on the curriculum, and I did. And he said we still have a great jazz department there now. So I helped start that program off. That was back in 78, I believe it was, yeah. But anyway, it's a pleasure talking with you, and hope that you get some wonderful enjoyment from this experience that I had a chance to experience. Thank you.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Okay. That was an interview with Herman Green. January 10th, 2009, right up San Francisco, sitting next to Bob Stiers. I can't remember what you were saying.
Must not have been important, as my father would say.
No, it was something about him leaning on you, but you still couldn't hear.
Oh, yeah, he, part two of the interview, where he's a little more somber in...
Yeah.
In
so when I gave you this thing, when you got together, it surprised you.
This is kind of like when I do this... the mic has a different set of ears, and in this case, a much better set of ears than we do, because here I'm interviewing him. I cannot even hear his responses because he was speaking so softly. But I pretty much shove the microphone about 3 inches from his mouth, and so you can hear him. And he's soldiering on, but he was a wounded soldier.
Yeah.
And I think this was a very good deed of Willie's and very cathartic for Herman to get out on the road and... You know, he started out in San Francisco. I mean, he helped open a club in 1958 there, so.
Yeah.
He, like
the Nighthawk.
So. The Nighthawk or something.
Did you get any shots of him, Pete?
Yes, I'll flow it to you.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
In the parlance.
Kind of blurry, dark, the head cut off.
Of course.
Well, some people say the band was blurry and dark tequila.
Oh, what? I was driving.
I
was
think
pretty...
that, I'd like to see that critic get up there and play in front of people.
Oh, yeah. But Bob was offended. He read a review, and like the guy kept referring to Herman as the old guy. It was pretty disrespectful.
Well, number one is...
I think it was from a deadhead...
Well, he talked about walking down Clay Street and hearing Watts' booming bass, so that's when he should have known. It's not a Stooges show, because you won't hear Watts' bass, you know, too mixed that prominently. And then he was expecting, like, okay, they're doing 1970, or Funhouse, you know, hit it, Steve, you know, like, on cue.
Oh, yeah, Steve McKay was playing with
us. Steve McKay, and Steve was very quiet and... medicating the pain away a little bit because he was really hit hard. And I mean, I don't see him doing this gig if, you know. A
couple days after Ronnie.
If he hadn't showed up, you could see, couldn't really fault him.
You know, he's coming to town in March.
Oh, really?
20, 21st, 22nd to record an album. So this cat named Dick Deluxe has a studio. He's going to play guitar, and he's asked me to come do bass. So.
Well, I'll say one thing about Steve was that we had a very interesting conversation on the way up about the horn and what you do with your saxophone. And like Herman was saying, they for TV or some big show in Vegas, you've got to polish the horn so it looks nice and shiny and new. And these guys are going, hey, that'd be like you sanding down that old bass you had. That's part of your
changing
sound.
Changing the sound.
And Steve has had this sax since 1965. Notice his stuff wasn't on that van in Montreal.
No.
That's part of him. And he's had the...
Had it with him in the room.
A little...
rebuilt.
The maneuver
pads.
Fixed the pads and all. But it's part of him. It almost looks like it's... could be surgically attached, but very interesting about that whole thing of maybe it's a superstition, but I could see how it affects the sound. I mean, now Mike has a bass that is a lot closer to the one he had, but maybe you got to play it a while too.
The Dan bass.
Yeah.
You know about this? This young man gave me a bass in San Diego.
Do people know this story? This is an interesting story.
Yeah, we get done playing. This young man said, hey, can I give you something Mike Watt? And I said, okay. And he gives me a 1965 Gibson EBO. Gee. Yeah. Actually, it's the third bass I've gotten since my 65 got stolen. A little red bass.
And this one sounds so much closer. In fact, that's the one thing Steve mentioned at the show backstage was, Mike, sounds like you again on the bass.
Yeah. A guy named Andy gave me one a couple days after the theft in Toronto, 69 EB3 Gibson. And then Adam Yauch gave me a 69 professional Les Paul bass.
This
is the heist. Yeah, in New York City the week later. So people are very nice to me that way, huh? I'm very grateful. But this Dan bass, it's closer to the one I lost.
I know this sounds silly, but you know, the one you had that the worn wood to where it, like the horn, it had absorbed the clubs and shows you'd played in and... is there something to be said for that, or is it just the architecture, really, of the instrument?
Well, the architecture, but no, they say when you play instrument, this is why instruments should not be put in cases and put away, because when you put music through them, it resonates the molecules, and it makes the wood actually more musical. So the more gigs an instrument does, the better it sounds. The properties of the wood get shaped by these resonances. Interactions. So
I'd go along with that.
I played a lot of gigs with that bass.
When did you start playing?
You know, hopefully somebody else is playing it in Russia or something.
No, I think they took the strings and made braces or tortured in Siberia. Who knows what they did
with
that
thing? Paddle.
Shocking.
No. Hopefully somebody's writing songs and expressing themselves. That's the way I look at it. I'm not going to get all bitter and woeful over, especially when three cats came and donated.
See, that's where the universe more than repays you back.
Yeah.
For all
so,
that.
You know what I mean? Feel without sorry for yourself is silly, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you been playing that bass? Does that go back to Minutemen days? Or?
No. I had a bass like it at the beginning of the Minutemen.
Well, that wasn't the one that
I gave it to Flea and it got stolen.
Did James
had Pedro, it had Pedro's spray painted on the front. I spray painted Pedro, and people thought my name was Pedro.
Well, they'd seen that movie.
LA so balkanized, most of the people in Hollywood didn't really know of San Pedro. That's some true. People saw it on a freeway sign.
Is it Wilmington and Delaware?
I mean, this
Delaware?
Is crazy about this area. Yeah. I mean, you fly over, it looks like one big town, but it's... actually all divided up in little communities. There's just no space between them, but the thinking is pretty provincial.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Iron Range in Minnesota, because it's people are, there's something about goods passing through and
also the way the town was laid out.
They
were actually little farming communities,
but a lot of things enter America through
the sport
here, and then they get sculpted into something else and, you know.
But the way the people live in freeways connect them. They got walls. You don't even know where you're driving through.
But here they're pinned in by the topography and maybe the...
But they don't know.
The harbor.
We're talking Pedro and Wilmington are separate.
Yeah,
and we're right next to each other.
Totally
but we're right physically next to each other.
There's the Pleasure Point, which is a whole different world.
I, there's parts of Pedro
like the
that
penthouse,
are
doing. You know.
If I take Pedro people to some of my spots, I'm peddling, and they don't know of it in our own town.
You went to the Royal.
Royal Palms. Today? That's part of my route. Yeah, I did. I called you from there, Bob.
Yeah.
Didn't you hear the sea?
All I could hear was my sinuses being pounding. No,
you
died?
You have some pain?
The Tiger Balm finally worked.
Okay, let's play some music.
let's get fucked up. Let's get fucked up. Let's get fucked up. Let's do some stuff and get fucked up. Yeah, tomorrow we'll feel like we've been hit by a truck, but let's get fucked up. Going to a cockfight. Hawk might never ever return. Ooh, going to the brink of oblivion. Gonna need a shrink to get back again.
From Pedro Show, reminiscing about a Meat Puppets gig Bob Stiers went to here in Pedro. Yeah, that it had a waterfall in it that would dance. That's where
yeah.
the dancing waters
came. Yeah,
and it just
was the perfect
from.
Way to see the Cramps the first time with the orange, you know, voodoo glow skulls.
And speaking of the Cramps, we just heard "Let's Get Fucked Up" by the Cramps.
Yeah.
And before that, we had the Marked Men, somebody from Texas, yeah. called with "Too Pretty to Fuck." And then
is there a theme here or what?
Chinese New Year in Tibet from Nothing
no,
Full.
There's a theme here.
Nothing Full. Is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah.
It's a state of mind.
It's a good word. I want to talk to our couch surfing guest.
Yeah.
Ulrich Adam.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bob. Turn this mic. Okay. Tips. Okay, I like some hints and tips that you could pass on to people who might have gotten excited by you gentlemen making your journeys. What would you tell them Well, you tell them to go first to couchsurfing.com.
That's the obvious first step.
Yeah.
Second thing is, like Adam mentioned earlier, there's this like network of trust that you leave references for people, so it can be hard to get started. Because if you don't have references, nobody will want to host you because they don't know what you're all about.
Unless they're Pete.
Unless they're Pete, because he just pulls everybody out.
Fuck it,
come on.
But she'll kill you if you don't.
Looking for Mr. Goodbar was written about Mr. Pete.
It's like the samurai sword. She knows when
So, basically, couchsurfing.com evolved to be more than just a place to sleep. So there's like communities for every city. There's like a group they can post messages about, you know, I'm having a party. We went to a party last night, an anti-Valentine's Day party.
In Long Beach.
So and there I was a couch surfer.
Yeah. So I was just in LA, didn't know what to do on a Saturday night. Looked at the group, said, oh, there's a party. I'll write her a message, see if I can come. So that way you can get introduced to the community without having to, you know, go to somebody's house to sleep. So yeah, that's a good way to get started, to go to like some gatherings of some sort in the communities.
Yeah. What about bringing like a buttload of money around?
Yeah, I say announce that in advance. Tell your host, oh, what would I do with my cash that I carry around?
I am well bankrolled.
I think it would,
for a reference.
I think it would fly better to, you know, cook a dinner, bring some booze, whatever.
Like, yeah.
Or that would work better, I think.
An offering.
Yeah. What was your secret?
I went to one of these meetings. It was like in Melbourne. Was my first experience. Like a very, really good community around the site there, and they just said, you know, we have a, I think it was a salsa lesson evening in some bar in Melbourne. So just went there, met a couple of guys, ended up going on a road trip for 3 days with five people I didn't know. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd also suggest, like, just being really open when you travel and not, like, having lots of, like, structured plans and expectations and stuff like that. Because, like, when I used to travel more like that and had kind of a lot of anxiety about, like, not knowing what else was going to happen. But just recently I've been kind of letting it go and, like,
let the tangents take its
course. And just finding out, like, getting a free car. Like, I just never, because I waited and hung out at my friend's house for a little longer and kind of, like, things weren't working out, it just worked out because I, like, kind of opened it up to it, let that happen. And then, like, you know, I was at, before I came here, I was at a Buddhist monastery for a week.
Where was that?
In Escondido.
Oh.
And, you know, I was thinking about Nels, and I was like, man, I haven't talked to him in years. I'm going to LA. I wonder if he's around. And then we went to this temple in LA, and there was his brother.
Alex.
And I saw his brother. I never met him before. And it was just
kind of looks like it.
Did you know? Yeah,
identical
twin. Did you know that?
I knew. Well, I didn't know they were twins. I guess I knew their. I knew he had a brother named Alex that played music and kind of. I think I'd heard one of his records once. And it was just such a weird coincidence. And then this whole thing, you know, with Peak was just blew my mind, you know, like with, you know, just showing up and, like, then, like, this morning just talking about, you know, she was telling me about her friend that knows all these people and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, and I just, out of the blue, I was like, oh, do you know this guy, Nels Klein, have you heard his music? And she was like, oh, that's cool.
Oh, maybe.
Big lady.
Maybe.
And this is like, and all this stuff happened because I just stayed really open, and like, I didn't even know I was going to stay with you last night. I thought I was just going to go to some hostel, and it just kind of like, things work out when you kind of like, have faith. You know, and just open up to it, and like,
yeah.
I feel like it's important to do that if you're, you know, it's an important experience to have, you know.
You know, the connection with me and her, this same day of the year we're born on.
Oh, yeah?
Did I mention that?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. What day?
I'm like him, except I'm not.
Okay.
What day is it?
It's December 20. Although she was born way before me.
Yeah.
a couple of lifetimes ago.
That parallel universe around the corner.
So Smog and Pedro will age you.
And I suppose as a traveler, I think it helps that you're a little bit easy on how where you sleep and a little bit prepared.
That's what I meant by expectations.
Hardship, maybe just flexible. A little.
Maybe leave the tiara at home.
Not sure.
Yeah, not every host will free up their bed and just sleep on the floor like Pete does.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I'm trying to get her into the deck.
My mind.
So, yeah, leave the tiara at home. Don't couch surf with the tiara. Look, I want to thank you guys for coming. Ulrich, Adam, safe seas.
Thank
righteous.
You.
Yeah, thank you. Pete, thank you so much for bringing them aboard.
You're
Bob,
welcome.
Thanks for coming down from Echo Park.
Edendale. Yeah. That's the old train stop.
You mean where there's
the,
actually...
The Edendale Freeway starts, yeah. It's still on the maps.
Also, it's not called Echo Park. Okay.
Well, it's where Silver Lake, Echo Park, and Atwater and Frogtown kind of come together.
Frogtown, that's where I'm recording Los Pumpkinheads record. We did the first session Wednesday. Money Mark, Raymond, and John Wicks on drums.
So one of those little warehouses over there by the river?
It's right next to the river.
Is that on Glenn?
There's a metal sculptor that's in the same little area with him. No, it's like, what is it, Riverside?
Yeah.
And,
Toonerville.
What's this other street? Starts with a G? Fletcher. Well, starts with an F.
Yeah,
that kind of G.
That is G or G? Don't make that mistake with
okay,
G.
Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, and Brother Matt, thank you for your most essential aiding and abetting, as always. And so it's been the February 15th, 2009, Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.